She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and you are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World, an inspirational and informative place where we never tell you what to think. We just want you to. And boy, are we going to get you thinking today. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to the sponsor of this show and a great partner of Mrs. Green's World, the Chapman Automotive Group. They consistently demonstrate strong corporate leadership in the business of sustainability and good stewardship through their charitable giving and good works for their award-winning Community Green Team. To learn more about them and the Green Team, please visit ChapmanTucson.com. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. For this next hour, we are going to be talking about conscious consumerism and exploring whether or not it's a big lie, in a sense, or is there a better way, or are we doing enough? Where are we going to give the big change? How are we going to make the big change happen to combat this faceless villain known as climate change and what that means and looks like? So joining me for this next hour is Alden Wicker. She is the founder of EcoCult, and I am quite frankly not sure how to describe her. I have read so much about her, I couldn't wait for this interview, but she is a force. She is the founder and editor of EcoCult, a lifestyle blog all about things sustainable in New York City and beyond, including fashion, beauty, food, design, and events. She is a regular contributor to Refinery 29 and has been published in Exo Jane, Well Good, Huffington Post Green, Narratively, Learn Vest, Conscious Magazine, just to name a few. She is a co-founder of the Ethical Writers Coalition, as well as the electronic music blog Under the Sound. She lives with her fiancé, and I hope that's current news. Alden, you never know. And two little rescue kitties in Brooklyn, thank you so much for being here and for being such a disruptor for good. I can't wait to get going.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so let's start with a little bit about your journey to becoming a true champion for sustainability and for Mother Earth. It's a lifelong journey. Was it a rude awakening? What has your path been, as I like to call it?
Well, I actually grew up in North Carolina and then Maryland. And my mom, a single mom, is not a hippie in any sense, but she's always been very liberal-leaning. And so I grew up on a diet of Time and Newsweek magazine, and I went to a summer camp for gifted children that was incredible. It was my first encounter with vegans there, and this is in North Carolina, and very nature-focused. And then when I went to, when we moved to Maryland, I went to another school that was sort of all about political action. So I grew up really, you know, believing that if something hurts the environment, we shouldn't do it.
And so you had a lot of seeds being planted, and, you know, kudos to your mom and a big shout out to parents out there to start planting the seeds of change early. And most unfortunately, from those days when you started, some report cards would consider us doing far worse than it was then. But I like to look at the silver lining, and we'll get to that. So thanks for sharing that. And let's talk about, I want to talk about EcoCult because I have so many questions about the article you wrote that I'm sure got a lot of attention. My friend Molly sent it to me, and it quite frankly hit me up the side of the head big time. But tell me about EcoCult and what it's all about and what you're doing to make a difference every day for the planet through that platform.
Well, when I started EcoCult, I was on an editorial team, but I was writing about personal finance, and I was really wanted to learn more about how I could be a more sustainable citizen and more sustainable consumer. And at the time, there were a lot of blogs, but the ones that were focused on sustainability seemed to take the view that if you really wanted to be sustainable, you you had to be a homesteader, you had to live in a cabin, that the idea that you would enjoy getting your nails done, or that you would enjoy fashion, or that you could live in a city and go out, was completely incompatible with the current party line at that time of, you know, fun things are for people who don't care about the environment. So I decided to start EcoCult because I wanted to show that, you know, you don't have to completely overturn your life in order to be, in order to care about the planet and what's going on in the world. So that was why I decided to do it. And at the time I thought, well, this is how I'm going to contribute to the movement. I'm just going to convert people to my side by showing all the beautiful and fun and tasty things about living sustainably that really improves your life.
And it began. I mean, that's just, and you're right. And I would also comment that those lifestyles are not sustainable either. Everybody can't do that and go off-grid and raise chickens and sheep and cows. The majority of the population in the world lives in big cities. So that's, to me, the you know, what we have to look at. So let's go to some of the things you do. You blog, you talk about fashion. What are some of the hot buttons for you through EcoCult that you're doing? What kind of messages are you making?
Well, I've actually come to focus on fashion, and the reason why fashion has really come to dominate EcoCult is the fact that there's actually already a lot of really smart people and bloggers and writers and everyone talking about food and sustainability, and there's a lot of bloggers talking about clean beauty, you know, non-toxic beauty, but there still aren't that many people talking about fashion, which the idea of sustainable fashion is so new and fresh. And the movement, I mean, really just started in 2013 after the collapse of Rana Plaza in Bangladesh, the factory that killed more than 1,000 people. So it's a really nascent movement that's really exciting to be a part of, and it's really, the technology is developing really fast. So I think my readers are really interested in it too. To think about, oh, like, how can you enjoy fashion while doing it in a way that isn't really terrible for the planet or people or animals?
I know, and I've written about it and do hashtag filthy fashion. I'm trying to get away from that. And it was very exciting. Back in May, I interviewed Carrie Summers, who's the founder of Fashion Revolution. And what she reported were some amazing changes. And you're right, it's kind of late to the party, but so important because it has such a ripple effect. I mean, I got to the point where I'd say, I wonder if that piece of clothing that I'm looking at was made by slaves. And that's not drama or over-exaggeration, as you know. There's a lot of ugliness and environmental impact to the fashion industry. So that's interesting, very interesting that you focused on that. And I, of course, am very glad you did. It will help to create a revolution. So I would like to read a quote when we talk about the article that you sent to me. Like I said, hit me up the side of the head. And I'm just going to read the opening paragraph very quickly and then delve into some of those pieces, because I think it kind of encapsulates everything you're doing and that you stand for. So when I was invited to speak on a panel in front of a UN delegation, the expectation was that I would dispense wisdom to bright young students about how their personal purchasing choices can help save the world. I stood behind the dais in a secondhand blouse, recycled polyester tights, and a locally made pencil skirt, took a deep breath, and began to speak. Conscious consumerism is a lie. Small steps taken by thoughtful consumers to recycle, to eat locally, to buy a blouse made of organic cotton instead of polyester will not change the world. So my question to you is, could you hear a pin drop? Were you getting reactions from the audience? What happened?
Yeah, I think, you know, the tenor of the room changed. They were all very receptive to my message.
Yes.
Yeah. And they had been primed for it because Halita Brown, who's a professor of economics and sustainability, I'm really butchering her title, but she went up before me, and she's much smarter than I am and much more educated on this topic. And she's been studying it. And she got up there and primed them by talking about the history of consumerism and talking about how our current unsustainable consumer society is basically the result of a long campaign to get us to consume more by the government and business working together to make it so that we're always consuming more in order to continue to grow the GDP, which is sort of the number that we're always pursuing. It always has to be going up. It always has to be growing. So she got up there before I did, and I was so relieved that she was supporting what I was about to say, because I was like, oh, this woman, if she doesn't agree with me, like, I'm going to lose this argument. But she said that, you know, it's really hard to be a sustainable person or a sustainable citizen when you have everyone who's in power is building things, building the system so that you are always encouraged to consume more.
Grow, 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 consume more, buy more, accumulate more. Totally agree. And I looked up her title because she is, you quote her later on when we talk to you about, when I want to talk to you about, brought to you by Multinational. She is a professor of environmental science and policy at Clark University. So we will definitely get to that. So where do you think we went wrong? The article is so well laid out, and I thought I'm just going to follow it so that our listeners can really get educated on, this is going to be upsetting to a lot of people. It was upsetting to me, because you have this feeling of, I want to do something, I want to do something, and you feel noble about those small changes. So where do you think we got it all wrong?
Well, I think where we got it wrong is that a lot of us withdrew from the political process, because the political process is sloppy, it moves slow, it's not Instagrammable. You vote once a year for your local representative. You can go to some protests or stuff, but that just seems so unfashionable to a lot of people, right? It just seems like you just didn't want to be the person yelling things with a sign. That's changed since November, obviously, but a lot of us in my generation, we just withdrew because we're like, we don't really want to be involved with that. But, you know, making these little choices every day, it was like you were actually doing something. You were making a dozen choices, 50 choices a day that hopefully put more good out into the world than bad. But the problem is that, you know, in the article, I use the example of plastic bottles. Another thing that I talked about in my speech to the UN youth delegation was the example of Mexico. And there's a vacation place in Mexico that's really popular, and it's beautiful and so fun, and it's called Tulum. And it's really, it's very eco-friendly to the consumer, right? So all the decisions, conscious consumerism has won there. It's a cool thing to do. You vegan, local cafes, you swim in the cenotes, there's no pool, you know, there's no man-made pools or anything. There's the jungle. It just seems like a really eco-friendly place where everyone's sort of on the same page. And when I went there, I was really excited because I was like, oh, this is a place that could serve as an example of how we could get consumers to switch to making the more conscious choices. And I just wanted to learn. I was like, how do they do this? But what I learned after I got there is that they have, because they don't have the support of the government for infrastructure and regulation to make it a sustainable place to visit, all the things that I just talked about are surface-level consumer decisions, and they have incredibly, incredibly serious problems with waste treatment, both human waste treatment and also, you know, solid waste treatment. So they don't have any place to put the recycling or trash. It just goes into the jungle. The human waste goes into the cenotes, basically. It goes down into the ground, but it's so holy that, you know, it contaminates everything, including the coral. And you just have these, like, massive problems. And so what that taught me, I was like, oh, wow, you could make all, I could go down there, and I'm making all the conscious decisions because that's the way people do it there. But without the government supported infrastructure to put in electricity so that everyone's not running these diesel powered generators. It doesn't matter what those choices are. You have to have the government support those choices of infrastructure and regulation.
And it's taking a deeper cut. I mean, I kept reading what you wrote and looked at other articles that you were published in, and it really is about taking a deeper cut and looking more deeply. And I can tell you this, I have been doing this for 10 years. It's my mission. It's my life. I am Mrs. Green and Gina Murphy Darling have, you know, we are one. And your article made me think a lot and changed the way that we're doing the shows and things that I want to write about. And I think a perfect example that you brought up, we want instant reaction. So if I go to a locally owned restaurant, it feels good, and I think we should do that. I totally agree for lots of reasons. But I don't really want to work on the farm bill because that is so annoying and so political and so onerous and takes so long. But what really matters is the farm bill, because that has such a ripple effect. So to your point, I agree with you, and I think thousands of our listeners will start thinking about things differently. We are removed from the political process, and the good thing that I think is happening, regardless of what your views are, people are really taking to the streets and realizing how important it is to have our voices be heard. So I have another quote.
Yeah.
Do you want to respond to that? Because I'm not in any hurry to get to my questions.
Well, I just wanted to say that it's really exciting that people are taking to the streets and protesting. But I think I've been reading a lot lately about successful political movements, and they take a lot of organization. And I'm hoping that a lot of this taking to the streets and raising our voices and sort of social media hollering will translate to really thoughtful, organized action to really get into the guts of why people make the decisions they do, and change that architecture so that it's easy for people to make the better decision instead of harder.
I agree with you. And I also think, to your point, it's finding common ground, because don't start it by defining the enemy. I just think it's really important. And we're seeing a little bit these past weeks. A perfect example is the Affordable Care Act and how the movement of people getting involved with their senators and elected officials created a wave of change, but it was the political process that did it. And I think that's just an outstanding example to just affirm what you said. So another quote, making series of small ethical purchasing decisions while ignoring the structural incentives for companies' unsustainable business models won't change the world as quickly as we want. Now, you gave the example of the community in Mexico. Do you want to expand a little bit about that, about structural incentives for companies to become more sustainable?
So there's, I wrote this before Whole Foods was bought by Amazon.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing is that Amazon is, if anyone's been paying attention, you can see that Amazon is quickly becoming the modern Walmart.
It's going to own the world.
Yeah, and they have terrible labor practices. They are amoral. They drive a lot of small businesses down the hole.
Yes.
Yeah, out of business. And so they bought Whole Foods, and Whole Foods had been held up as this paragon of conscious capitalism. The thing is that I think Amazon buying Whole Foods sort of sunk that argument. Amazon's going to do what it needs to do to make Whole Foods profitable. And Whole Foods is profitable, but its profits were starting to go down a little bit. So now Whole Foods is going to be subject to even more pressure from investors and quarterly profit reporting. And so it's really hard. I mean, when you think about the companies that are the most altruistic, Patagonia, privately held company.
Right.
H&M, which is a controversial international figure, but they're doing a lot around sustainability.
They are doing a lot.
More than half owned by the original family. Even if you think about Nordstrom, which you know, they're doing a little bit around sustainability, but they're a beloved company with great customer service, right? People
yes.
really like them.
Yes.
Still, the original family is still very much involved.
It all changes.
When you have,
there's the big warning that we're going to come back with that. Let's talk about it when we come back, about the companies that are doing the ethically and morally right thing and how we support them. We'll be right back. More from Alden Wicker in 30 seconds.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And thanks for listening. This hour, we are talking about conscious capitalism. Is it a big lie? Some really, you know, I'm so glad that Alden brought up the Amazon Whole Foods acquisition. Are we all doing enough to combat the faceless villain of climate change, which is creeping on us more and more every day? And if not, what more can we be doing to make an even bigger difference? So joining for me for this hour is Alden Wicker. She's the founder of EcoCult. And I'm just going to read this from her website because it's that good. EcoCult is a curious, thoughtful, utterly enthusiastic view into the New York City sustainable scene. It is stunningly informed, brash, beautiful, and unapologetic. EcoCult loves anything local, sustainable, eco-friendly, handmade when it's well done. EcoCult finds finger wagging a boar. Instead, EcoCult celebrates all that is beautiful, delicious, fresh, well-designed, and fun in sustainability. And after I read that, I wrote, wow. So once again, Alden, thanks for stirring things up, and thanks for spending the time with us. So let's go a little bit.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's just so fun, and the time is flying as usual, so let's not waste it by me saying that. But the Amazon Whole Foods acquisition, it's almost a metaphor to me for the big, big crisis and challenge that we face. It's big. It's Pac-Man. And we make jokes about Amazon ruling the world. So did you have some more thoughts you wanted to share on that merger?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that we're gonna see Whole Foods change, maybe not right away, but they'll start changing in subtle ways.
Guaranteed.
Or ways that we don't even see. And it just won't be the company that we hoped it would be, and it won't serve as an example that we hoped it would for the way entrepreneurs could do well by doing good.
So what about consumers bringing about some fairly significant changes? And I could think of two that came to mind right away. When Mothers united to get Walmart to carry organic milk, I mean, it was consumer groups putting pressure on them so that they started carrying it. And I remember I interviewed someone, and she said, if you are a mom in the middle of, you know, Podunk, Idaho, and the only store you can go to is Walmart, you want to have organic milk for your kids because of all the bad things that non-organic milk contains. And then Hershey's, I mean, there's a huge, you know, fair trade, ethical sourcing of cacao for ethical sourcing of chocolate. So are there times when the power of the purse and conscious consumerism groups come together and bring about positive change?
I think that there are. Those are just a couple examples. There aren't usually very many examples of sort of consumer boycotts affecting change. And I think also that's a very labor-intensive process. And I think that actually represents some of the problems with conscious consumerism as a whole, which is we invest so much of our time and our money and our energy into all these tiny little things. And, I mean, we just can't do what those moms did for every single organic product. We can't run a campaign against every single one of the 80,000 untested chemicals for all of the thousands of companies that are using those chemicals. And I think that it's sort of a waste of our resources to say, oh, every purchase is a moral act, because you get decision fatigue. You spend all of your money. And at the end of the day, there's still a lot of people buying that thing because it's the cheaper and easier thing to buy. So it doesn't, I think it's a really, it's not an efficient way to bring about the change that we want to see.
And I just hope you stand by that. And another one that you kind of got me, I'm so proud when you described your outfit. And I did a public speaking event the other day, and people said, oh my gosh, you look so nice. And I said, resale shop, Goodwill Industries, and just went down my whole outfit, and everything was from recycled clothes. So what are your thoughts on that? Is that an area where there's enough of a movement that it's impacting fashion, or do we still have the millions and millions of consumers versus the very few thousands that are taking to secondhand stores and resale? Give me your spin on that.
Well, I think that there are more and more consumers waking up to the tragedy of fast fashion. Unfortunately, it's not really enough. You know, there's some little brands starting up that are completely sustainable. But when it comes to fashion, even the mass market brands that are really trying to figure out how to be more sustainable, the technology just doesn't exist. It's just not available. There's no way to produce 2,000 shirts in a way that 2,000 affordable shirts in a way that's sustainable and ethical. So they're sort of investing money into trying to figure out these technologies, but most consumers can't afford an ethical and sustainable piece of clothing at this point, and they're hard to find. And we're just not going to get there through consumer action. Unfortunately, there's no legislation right now because it's such a new movement. So there's no equivalent to the Farm Bill for sustainable fashion.
Right. I agree. And it's so big and so massive, and the battle will be so large. And I guess there's a point at which I just say, I've got to be doing something every day besides, you know, having guests like you on the show to really continue to wake people up and to get them excited about the consciousness of the planet and being consumers. Because at the end of the day, and I'm kind of skipping to the close of the show, and we'll get back on track, but to me and to our team, as we look over show guests and read research and on, the answer really is we have to consume less. And what you said in the beginning of the show about it's so sad when they announce the numbers for the sales during the holiday season, and they say, you know, sales only increased 3%. And now I sit there and I think, so what? It'll be great when sales go down because there's a better path for consuming less, which then leads to the whole issue of, you know, employability. What can we do? How do we consume less and still keep a healthy economy for people? So it's a perfect segue to your thoughts on the issue of privilege. And not only has the sustainability movement been charged with being elitist, and I think I would argue that now, I think it's becoming more, you know, a little bit more mainstream, but it is always said it's so much more expensive. And I've had people on from the Natural Resources Defense Council and the Environmental Working Group who say there are ways, especially in the food area, to eat healthier and not have it be extremely more expensive. So what's your spin on the issue of privilege, and how do we need to kind of take a look at that?
Well, you know, when people say, oh, there are ways to save money and be sustainable, what they're not saying is that that costs time. So I can definitely, you know, I could definitely save money with some sustainability strategies, but they're going to take time. There's DIYing, cooking all your own food, going from grocery store to the butcher, which, you know, doesn't use plastic, uses paper instead, and then going over to the place where you can get bulk and everything. It's just a lot of, and time is money. And a lot of people don't have time or money. And so, yeah, I think that the sustainability movement right now has been duped into focusing too much on personal choices when there are really, like, when everyone should have access to clean water. And what I like to say is that we can't conscious consume our way out of issues like Flint. You know, there's nothing, I mean, maybe we could do a one-for-one sort of sunglasses benefits to Flint, but what really needs to happen is the government needs to step in and fix that system and then also help the families whose kids have been poisoned by lead. And, you know, buying, there's nothing we could buy that's going to fix that. So, you know, we need to think about how everyone can have access to organic food and how, I mean, right now we're saying, oh, well, I would never buy non-organic strawberries. But there's still people who do, and because that's made a choice of whether or not to buy strawberries that sort of poison field workers in the process of growing them or not, that shouldn't be a choice that people have to make.
I hear you. I mean, it is not just singing to the choir, it's so real, like so real in terms of when we go to the store. Same with organic eggs. The price of them is coming down a little bit, organic milk coming down a little bit. And, of course, there's lots of people that make the case, shouldn't be drinking milk, shouldn't be eating eggs. So there's that whole spin on it, which I also agree with and don't practice. I don't drink milk, but, I mean, there is that issue. So back to your speech at the UN, you got, I'm sure, the audience attention with your somewhat pejorative opening statement. But you did discover, let's expand a little bit on that, that you were in good company and that there was impressive research to back up your belief about the fallacy of conscious consumption. You had facts, and I always have to do tongue-in-cheek, not all facts, environmentalism brought to you by multinational. Elaborate a little bit on what you found that the researchers are saying about consumerism.
Well, but just that there's not been any movement in conscious consumerism that has decreased our destruction of the environment in any way. I mean, there's only one way in which it has, consumer choices have, which is consumption of meat has dropped by 19%, which is a huge amount. But that's not for environmental reasons. That's because people are noticing that red meat can be really bad for your health, conventional red meat. So there's just no examples for us to look to say, oh, okay, so conscious consumerism works. So let's try it, you know, in this way, which is really disappointing. I mean, you see that, you know, the water bottles, which are so clearly bad for the environment, everyone knows, and environmentalists have made a really good job of sort of guilting people or browbeating people and saying you should just never, ever, ever use water bottles. It's bad. And yet water bottle consumption has gone up almost exclusively except for a small dip during the recession. But they're at record high. So that should be a really clear, easy, simple issue. But it's not working.
We buy, on your research, and I have not, it was one of my biggest platforms when I started because the numbers blew me away, but 1.7 billion half-liter bottles, 5 bottles for every person every single week. And you say because market capitalism makes it incredibly difficult to make helpful, sustainable choices. And let's delve into this a little bit deeper, because what I say when I do public speaking, people say it's cost so much more to be a conscious consumer. And those people say, I can't afford this, I can't afford that. And they may have a water bottle in their hand, or they may have a Starbucks in their hand. And I say, let's shift the paradigm a little bit without guilt tripping you. How much a week do you spend on those? And how much would an investment, like I'm a big fan of Swell bottles. I've had Sarah Kaus on the show.
Oh, me too.
I've had Sarah's bottles from when she started. There was a bottle named Mrs. Green because she was just starting. You know, she came to Miraval, which is a resort out here. So we have become friends and stayed in touch. And look at what's happened with her company. It has skyrocketed. It went over $100 million in revenue. I mean, she's a rock star. So somebody's buying them. And I just said this at a meeting the other day with the green team. I said, this bottle cost me $35 and it's 4.5 years old. So where's the argument that buying an expensive water bottle once is more expensive? But it's like you say, I have to convince people one audience at a time, and it's exhausting. To your point, it's exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, one way to address that problem would be to, you know, so actually I want to bring up an example of a conversation I had two nights ago. We stopped by a bar in our neighborhood where we know the bartender really well, and we ordered a couple cocktails. He's a great bartender, and he put our cocktails down in front of us, and they had straws in them. Environmentalists and a lot of bloggers I know get very angry about the straws, and it is really frustrating because even if you say, I don't want a straw, bartenders have a muscle memory where they put the straws in.
Yes.
And so I looked at him and I said, hey, so can I ask you a question? You know, I just want to know, like, why do bars use straws, and is there any way to get bars not to use straws? And he was like, it's almost impossible. He said, I think that straws are terrible. They're plastic. They're wasteful. They even jam up our plumbing system. And then he went on to list all the reasons why it's really hard for bars not to use straws. People get angry if you don't give them a straw. Metal straws are really expensive, and people walk out the door with them, so they're only served at, like, really nice straws. Really nice bars. Paper straws fall apart too quickly. There's just all these reasons why. And so that conversation that I had with him is the result of my own paradigm shift over the past year of, instead of getting angry and saying, why aren't you doing this? It's so obvious, is to stop and say, why are you doing this? I would like to know. I clearly am not a bartender and I don't understand. And so when it comes to water bottles, why is someone drinking that water bottle? Because there's no water fountains left anymore. They're all broken or taken away.
Great point.
When you walk into a fast casual restaurant, they won't give you a cup of water, and it still comes in a wax cup or a plastic lined cup that's not recyclable. And they want you to buy water, or the health code says that they're not allowed to refill your water bottle. Some restaurants do to that and some don't, but technically they're not allowed to do that. So there's all these structural reasons why even I find myself with a water bottle in my hand sometimes. You get on an airplane, you're running late to your plane, you don't have time to refill your water bottle after the security checkpoint, and you run onto the plane, and when you say, can you refill my water bottle, from their own large water bottle, they give you a weird look. There's, as a conscious consumer, you're constantly trying to figure out, trying to get the courage to be a weirdo, and then on top of that, planning ahead, figuring out, like, what are the pain points, how am I going to fix this, and then at the end of the day, you don't have any time or energy left to call your senator and be like, I'm sorry, what happened to all of the water fountains,
yes,
like, in around town? Like, why can't we put them back in?
Yes, yes, and it's really good point. And, of course, we live in the desert where it's 100 degrees every day, so there is some hope about that in some of the places around here. And I want to share the story. I'll share one of my clients, which is a hotel. It's a historic hotel called Hotel Congress. It's got 3 restaurants, and they are consulting with me to go greener. And they did the straw thing, and there was hardly any pushback at all, and they saved so much money on not buying straws that they now use biodegradable, compostable to-go containers. And I guess my thought is, while you were talking, probably the demographic of their customers, you're talking about the tribe, you know what I mean? It's like, or people that are already there. However, I went there Saturday to get Bloody Marys, and guess what? They do have straws if you ask for them, and I said, don't tell anybody. can I have a straw for my Bloody Mary? It's like, they know me. And I said, do not out me to, you know, Todd and Rita, but I need a straw for my Bloody Mary. So that's
oh, yeah, sticking your face in a bunch of olives.
Exactly. And celery things sticking out and some other horrible thing they put in there that I had my friend eat. She goes, you're not going to eat that? And they all know me. So when we come back, we're going to take another break. Let's talk about a little bit more about what we can do. And you have a list in that article about, let's get into some of the meat, because I don't want people leaving the show thinking all the things that they're doing don't matter, because that is not your message. So we come back. Let's talk about what they can do, the instead ofs. Everybody, I hope you're having as much fun and learning as much as I am. We'll be back with Alden Wicker from Eco Cult. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World, and thanks for being a part of it. Please join me once again in welcoming Alden Wicker. Alden is the founder and editor of Eco Cult, a lifestyle blog about all things sustainable in New York City and beyond, including fashion, beauty, food, design, and events. And I would add, she's a change maker, a thought leader, a champion of Mother Earth, and a disruptor for good, and all that that implies. Alden, thanks so much, not just for being here, but for the ruckus you're helping to create, including being on the show, because there'll be thousands of listeners that you'll get to think a little bit more and go a little bit deeper. So do we cover it enough about the societal and social impediments to acting responsible? I mean, I think the water bottle was really just the quintessence of a good idea, of example of that, because you have to have water. And in many cases, you can go through this whole city and good luck finding a water fountain. So that's another one. Is there another one, or do you want to go on to how do we mobilize the troops to start doing bigger and more important things that'll be sustainable?
Yeah, I mean, I could go on forever about various examples, but yeah, let's talk about some like really more affirming things you can do to get involved in the sustainability movement beyond just purchasing.
Yeah, they are small switches in our mentality, but like you said, we can make a bigger difference. So give some of the examples, and it's fine for me if you go right from the article, or if you have other ones that are, you know, that have come up for you since the publishing of the article in March.
Well, the first thing is that you should let your representatives and businesses too know that you care about these things. They might not know. I mean, they will be swayed. Some of them are a little bit harder to get in touch with, but if you call them around a specific issue, or especially if you join in with a campaign that's being a call-in campaign, not a sign an online petition campaign, a call-in campaign organized by an environmental organization around a particular topic, I really do think that makes an impact. And then the other thing you can do is you should absolutely be actively donating to at least one reputable environmental organization that's working on one of these causes. And the reason why that's so important is, I'll bring up the example, a fashion example again. So a lot of people don't know that there's several types, semi-synthetic fabrics that are actually made from trees, rayon, viscose, modal. These are made mainly from eucalyptus trees and bamboo, but there's a large problem with them being sourced from endangered rainforests in Indonesia and the Amazon. And so most people don't even know that. But there's been a really successful movement to get a lot of fashion companies to commit to sourcing rainforest-free viscose rayon. Now, did they do that because of consumers? No, they didn't. They did that because one organization called Canopy realized this was a problem and just started cold calling these fashion companies and working with them to figure out how to get them to commit to this and to sort of come up with a toolkit and remove all the barriers. And so all of these fashion companies are coming out and committing to going to rainforest-free fashion before anyone even knew this was a thing. So what that taught me was that instead of tweeting directly at a corporation, give money to places like Canopy that are really shifting the needle on this issue.
You know, I don't even know what to say to that. My journey began 10 years ago deep in the rainforest in Peru, where you talk about the rude awakening and the eye-opener and the pain and the horror and the injustice and on and on. And I certainly did spin it into something positive. And I'm going back to Ecuador in October for another trip deep into the rainforest. So you can be sure that I wrote down Canopy for a show guest coming up. Kelly will know about this as soon as we're finished our interview, because I love that.
Oh, Nicole Rycroft is absolutely amazing. You should definitely interview her.
I've got it down, kiddo. And, you know, we interviewed the founder of Kiva. There's another example of substantive change, and their numbers blow me away. I mean, it's more on the social justice arena, but ending poverty is a key to a sustainable and socially just planet. And 10,000 villages, I mean, the things that they're doing, we're going to do a whole campaign in the fall about conscious consumerism for the holidays. And it's going to be called More is Less is Better. And talking about thoughtful giving and, you know, if you want to give someone a gift, what it could be ethically sourced and what it would mean to the nonprofit and all of that. So you got me going about Canopy. I will be checking it out. I can tell you that right now. Another good example, share with our listeners, I thought it was very interesting about, instead of signing a petition demanding that a Subway get a chemical out of its sandwich bread, what should they do? It's so much bigger than that. I get your point so spot on.
Well, they should be thinking about the entire system. They should be letting, if you care enough about keeping your family and yourself safe from toxins, to spend extra money on toxin-free cleaning products, then you absolutely care enough to let your representative know that you are incredibly upset with the way the U.S. currently regulates the approval of new chemicals to the market, and that you would like them to be completely overhauled, because people spend millions and millions of dollars on green cleaning products, which is great for those companies, but it shows that if we had spent any amount of that money donating to reputable nonprofits and NGOs that are working on trying to overhaul this system, I really think we would have made a lot more progress.
And you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think it's unquestionable. So another one that I love, because it's time for us very soon here all over the country where it's fall, instead of driving to an organic apple orchard to pick your own fruit, use that time to volunteer for an organization that combats food deserts and skip the fuel emissions too. And to me, that one was reflective of the whole picture, the integrated thought of what that means. And yet, I have such good memories of taking my kids to Apple Annie's because it was a day we picked pumpkins, we were out in nature, it was all family. And yet you have a good point. So what would you say to there? Is there a balance there where, you know, maybe if you carpooled, it would be better? You don't want to do away with the Apple Annie's, or do you?
You know, that's a really good point that you make. And I believe that we should all have room in our life for joy and appreciation of things that make us really happy and connect us back to our food system and the environment. We should be going hiking. We should be going to the apple orchard and picking food. And I would never wish upon anyone a life where they're doing nothing but social justice, environmental justice acts.
It would be an abysmal life.
Yeah, it would be so sad.
It would be so sad.
Yeah, it would be really sad. But, you know, I think that go and recognize it for what it is, which is an activity that refreshes your soul, and don't allow yourself to think, well, we went apple picking and therefore we've done our part for the food system this year.
Good point. Like, really good, very valid point. And I think it's, you know, literally, no pun intended, food for thought. So there's another one where you said, and you said this many times, and I could not agree with you more, the marginalized populations always suffer the most. I just helped be on a panel where they're funding, you know, it's unimaginable to me. And this is where the elitist part comes in. You know, I walk in my house and it's 110 degrees and I make sure the air conditioner is set at X so that I'm not hot, right? I have that, I have that ability and that luxury and that blessing. So we funded a program in El Paso for pregnant women in a very, very high-risk, poor neighborhood to get coolers in their homes so they don't die from the heat, which, of course, can happen there, and to get solar on the roofs and to educate them about the use of solar and all that. So your point about everybody should be entitled to, it's America, to have clean air and clean water and access to energy. And God knows on the Navajo reservation, many of those homes don't have electricity. Still, it's 2017.
Wow.
So those are the kinds of things that you're talking about fighting for. So it's really is the essence of your message, do both. Don't give up all those small things, but take it a step it up and mobilize to make even bigger changes.
Well, I would say that you know what, don't worry about the tiny thing. You know, don't be a perfectionist. You know what, I would never, some people would, and I vehemently disagree with them when you said, don't let anyone know that I use a straw. You know what, use the straw. Use the straw, and then take that refreshment and that energy that you've saved from guilting yourself over the straw and use it elsewhere. That's more, there are diminishing returns to the tiny little things that we do. And there are some big things that you can do. You can just, you know what, if you really wanted to make a statement, you could move out of the desert, which requires air conditioning, and move to a place. I mean, I think
yes.
Barbara Kingsolver, the author, did this.
She did.
Was like, I can't do this anymore. And she moved to Appalachia to grow her own food.
She did. That is a big, bold move. So thanks for putting it out there. So the funny thing that came to my mind is you just absolved me from my guilt from using Q-tips. Because after I talked to Lauren Singer, every time I use a Q-tip and put it to my eyes, I'm like, oh my gosh, more waste, more consuming, more shipping, more plastic, more packaging. So I'm just not quite to the use a rag to take my mascara off. So now I'm just going to say, you're doing so many other things as Mrs. Green. It's okay if you're using a Q-tip. To your point, guilt is a wasted amount of energy. I could not agree with you more. So we have a little bit more time left, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about how you use EcoCult to expand the platform, to help raise the consciousness. What are some of the exciting things you're doing to inspire people? This show to me was very inspirational and informative. It wasn't Debbie Downer. It's like, if we don't impact policy and if we don't get the right people in office, and not just at the national level, lots of these changes are going to happen at the local level. I mean, with the climate agreement, and when Trump said he's not going to be in compliance with the Paris Accord, what happened? Cities all over the country and towns said, well, we are. And there's a lot of that what's in that agreement that cities have the power to follow or not. So I felt encouraged about those big policy decisions and the development of green energy and a true green economy. So what's your reaction to that little rant I went on? It's like,
well, you know, Actually, there was, I don't know if you saw it, but the EPA was going to hold on the ozone rule, the implementation of the ozone rules. And there was a huge political outcry from environmentalists and people all over the United States. And everyone mobilized and were very efficient about, they labeled it like the dirty air bill. They said, you know, that's ridiculous. They really made it about asthma, and they made it about particulates in the air that we breathe every day, and they made it very personal, and Scott Pruitt backed off. And that gives me so much hope, because it shows that, you know, he's moving pretty fast to destroy the earth, but if we have a big enough outcry about these things, like they do back off, and that makes me really excited, because, you know, what I'm doing on EcoCult is I'm saying, here's an issue, here's everything you need to know about the issue, here's what you can do. And at the top of every list, I say, you know, when it comes to, say, polyester microfibers, which are the little tiny fibers that go into the ocean and our rivers from our clothing, I say, first thing you do, donate to these organizations. And then after that, if you have the time and energy and money, buy a Guppy Friend bag that you can put in your laundry. Try to buy less polyester, though I understand why you would buy polyester. Here's some washing tips. First things first, you know, learn about the issue, donate to the people who are the experts, trust the experts, and then think about, okay, well, what can you easily integrate into your own life that will make a small difference?
It's huge. So what's the silver lining to all of this? And I know you believe there is one, to the environmental crisis that's facing us. Is there a silver lining?
I think that you know, after the election, people woke up and said, oh, you know what? I'm going to be political now. And that makes me really, really excited. It sucks that we're going through this moment, this probably 4 years of environmental regulation rollbacks. But I'm hoping that will be just a blip on what hopefully will be a trajectory to really thinking about protecting the environment so that we can protect our way of life.
So let's go back just for a second, because we're going to be coming to a close very quickly. What's your spin on signing petitions? And just a little bit of an example. I'll get something from, you know, the Sierra Club, and it says, you know, stop the destruction of wolf habitat in X. And sometimes I'm like, I sign it. Is this doing any good? Is it doing any good at all? So what's your thought on that's part of the thing? I can't go there and protest. There's no bill in my town to do it. My legislators aren't from there. Is signing petitions sometimes an effective means to have your voice be heard?
It's easy and quick to do. I don't know if your inbox is like mine, but I get about 17 petitions a day.
Yes.
And so what I've decided is that I'm going to focus on a few things and really get to know them and understand them and focus my energy on them. So the wolf habitat thing is a very important issue. It's not the issue I'm focusing on, but I know that there are a lot of animal lovers who are focusing on that. So I would say sign the petitions that are important to you, but also don't sign the petitions that are important to you, and use that time and energy to share an article on Facebook or call your local representative about that issue. So you can really, you know, direct your resources in a way that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, take a deeper cut. And everybody, for more information about Alden and about EcoCult, you can go to EcoCult.com. And for other social media handles, please visit MrsGreensWorld.com. We'll happily direct you directly to her Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest sites. And believe me, you'll want to check them out. Our next Down to Earth show is with Tim Sibley and Brandy Farrar, Your Home in Sickness and in Health. And you mentioned it, Alden. Childhood disease, one of the fastest growing, asthma. There's a reason for that. And then our Mrs. Greensworld show on September 12th is Premal Shaw and Kathleen Bennett, Kiva Beyond Charity. This is a show that you won't want to miss either. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed this. I want to say I hope you enjoyed this 5 minutes as much as I did, because that's what it seemed like. Alden, keep up the great work. We'll stay in touch, and thanks for taking the time to be at Mrs. Green's World.
Thank you so much for having me.